Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino with you. And the phone number for you for the first 40 minutes of the show until we have our guest is 201-939-4513. And at 1240, Vincent Bonsignor from the LA Daily News will be joining us to preview the Los Angeles Rams, who are trying to have a bounce-back season after winning just four games last year. And Paul, obviously a very quiet time for the NFL, not a whole lot going on. But the Rams are an interesting team that has a very good defense, and a defense that would probably be ranked higher if their offense just gave them a little bit of help.
Well, a team that the Giants played in London last year and needed a Landon Collins pick six to save the day against Casey Keenum.
And also, by the way, a under 1 minute drive that got inside the Giants' 20-yard line, I believe, that could have given the Rams the lead.
Until DRC came up with a pick.
Correct. I think they had five turnovers that game.
They did.
And it was still a one-score game. That shows you how good their defense can be.
They were difficult. And believe me, the Giants had a rough time in that game, but they were able to pull it out. And, of course, that really turned around their season. I think we all agree that was the linchpin that made the Giants a playoff contender. Look, I don't think there's any question that Jared Goff is a good quarterback. I still believe that Carson Wentz is better.
I agree.
And ultimately will have a finer career. But that doesn't mean that Jared Goff can't win.
Well, I don't think I know if Jared Goff's a good quarterback yet. I don't think I know that. I think he has to prove it. You know, you could be okay in college and never make it in the pros. So I think he's something that kind of has to prove it.
A lot of guys do that.
And, boy, he had as rough of a seven games as a rookie as you can have. Now, not a lot of help, offensive line, wide receivers, but nevertheless, he had his struggles. If you want to watch the rest of the show, folks, make sure you go to Giants.com, the Giants mobile app. You can watch the rest of the show there. Again, we have our guest coming on at 12:40, so you can go there right now.
He's got a good skill set, though, John.
No, he does.
I mean, the tools are there to give him a chance.
Right, but he's also one of those guys that played in that spread, you know, air raid offense
in
college, so who knows how that's going to translate, which is always the risk.
And I think, you know, when we talk to Vincent a little bit later on, we'll get really in-depth into what it is that they do well and don't. But to me, Todd Gurley... I just don't know. They're trying to make him their bell cow back. And I'm just not so sure that he is a bell cow back, despite the success he had earlier in his career.
Why do you say that?
I don't know that he's got the frame and the durability.
Really? He's a big dude.
He's a thick dude. He's more like a fire hydrant than he is a big, strong, hulking guy. He runs bigger and with more power than his frame.
I mean, he's 226 pounds at 6'1". That's pretty good.
But he runs like he's 6'3", 235.
I'll say this. I believe Todd Gurley does have the ability to be that guy. And I think what happened last year is that the Rams' passing attack was just so pathetic.
People put 10 in the box.
Exactly. And if there's zero threat, and by the way, other than Kenny Britt, their receivers really aren't very good either. I think Tavon Austin is more of a gimmick guy than he is an actual wide receiver.
I'm not a big fan.
So I think it's just, and you know how it goes, Paul. You can have the best running back in the world. If they're putting 9-10 guys in that box, you're finished.
I understand that. And I feel very bad for Todd Gurley in that regard because he was running into a brick wall many a time.
And their offensive line wasn't exactly popping a lot of holes either.
No. Put it this way, if your O-line's not very good, then you're better off going backfield by committee. Because if you go to a feature back, a porous offensive line is going to get that guy beaten up in a hurry.
That's true.
And it will take away his effectiveness. Maybe the combination of the line and what I perceive to be Gurley running bigger and stronger than maybe he is winds up hurting his effectiveness, at least in terms of the number of plays he plays and the number of yards that he gets. I would say this. I'm a huge Cooper Kupp fan. Love Cooper Kupp.
I think he'll be a good player.
I don't know how quickly he's going to be able to do it.
One of your FCS guys.
Yes.
Paul loves his FCS
I do love my FCS guys.
By the way, speaking of FCS guys, you saw the nice little couple quotes that John Lynch had on our boy Lorenzo Jerome.
Yes, John and I do college games with the Northeast Conference. That's an FCS conference. And John Lynch, the GM of the 49ers, was able to outmaneuver four other teams to get a free agent safety, Lorenzo Jerome, from St. Francis of Pennsylvania. The guy is a ball hawk with a capital B and a capital H. And it looks like, I stress, he's going to make their 53.
Yes, see, apparently he had more takeaways than anybody else in training camp, which is consistent with what we saw on the college level. Anyway, we digress. We'll talk about the Rams later on in the show, but we should mention their defense, and their defensive line is really what makes them tick. They had a couple good linebackers, too, in Alec Ogletree and Mark Barron, but, you know, Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, they signed Connor Barwin, Michael Brockers. They got a bunch of defensive linemen that are really good players.
Well, again, this is one of those teams that they know they don't have a deep defense, so they concentrate on maximizing whatever efficiency they can get out of a certain unit. They've got some guys in the front seven that can do things to you. They know that their secondary, not so great. So they've got to make as much havoc or create as much havoc as they can from the front seven, which is something that the Eagles try to do. Same thing.
Absolutely, no question about it. Again, we'll take your calls later on. We'll have our guests on the Rams coming your way at 12:40. 201-939-4513 is the number. We got a couple calls on the Giants. We also want to talk a little bit about who you would pick as an MVP from each team in the league, which is something they had on NFL.com the other day. So I guess it's kind of who the MVP of each team in the league would be if you were choosing one, and we will have that discussion coming up later on in the show. But I see guys on the line. I might as well take calls on it right
now.
Let's get them in. Folks, we have some open lines, too. If you want to get in and talk some Giants football, you can. Let's go to Eric in New Jersey. He will lead us off today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Eric. How about yourself?
Wonderful. Thanks for asking. We were talking about Dwayne Harris yesterday, and I know he's been nicked up a little bit over the last couple of seasons. And, you know, maybe not as been as productive as you as he has been in the past. And I was very interested in this guy, Kevin Snead, and I haven't heard a lot about him on the show, and I wanted to get an update on what's going on with that guy for his speed and maybe what he could do in the on the special teams. And then also a guy from Penn State, Swan. You know, I haven't heard a lot about what he's doing, you know, what he's done over OTAs, and see what you guys got to say about those guys.
I'll take Swan because I talked about Snead last week. I'll let Paul take him this week.
Yep.
Look, he's a defensive lineman, and you can only see so much from defensive linemen in the spring. That's why you didn't really hear us talk much about Dalvin Tomlinson either, because it's really hard to see how effective these guys are going to be. I saw him flash a couple times during practice, but again, you're working with that pad. So until we get to camp, I'm really not going to have a good feel for him.
As far as Snead goes, yeah, we know about his burning speed at 4.22. We all get that, but this is not underwear Olympics. This is the NFL. And quite honestly, he's got a long way to go if he's going to make this team. I think your chances are better of making the practice squad with him, quite honestly, because as I've said many times on this show before, he doesn't have to be a terrific NFL-grade receiver to make the practice squad. You can use him as a decoy on your scout team to play receiver, slot receiver, halfback, quarterback, and he can really be like a jackrabbit, if you will, for the scout team. And when I say that, I mean a guy who your defense can chase all around the field because you can't teach speed. And that would be extremely useful for the Giants. So that would be what I would think about Snead. Now, I want to address your comments about Dwayne Harris for just a second because, yes, we did talk about him with Fecals yesterday, John, on yesterday's program. And I get it, okay? His punt return numbers way down. He only averaged a little over 5 yards a punt return, which was like half of his career average. I know it was a very poor year for him on punt returns. But even his kickoff return average was over 24, which was only 2 yards under his kickoff return average. I mean, that, you know, okay. So maybe it was just a shade under what he usually does. But don't confuse the fact that he had such a poor season statistically on punt returns with the fact that he's not a valuable player or a good player.
I mean, it was one element of his game that dropped. I'm just looking for the future. And, you know, when you see a guy running 4.2, you know, maybe the school he came out of wasn't, you know, the highest grade Division I school he can come out of. But so when you see that kind of speed, like you can't teach, then you want to see what he can do on the pro level.
Well, you certainly, I tell you what, I go back to what I said about using him on a scout team. Nothing wrong with using him on the scout team as a kick returner either and cause havoc for your frontline guys trying to get down there and catch that speed.
Now,
again, that's what I'm thinking.
I want to add something onto that real quick, Eric, before we say goodbye. And I want to make sure you understand this, though. You're right about the speed and the raw tools. That's all great. Here's the problem. Do you know how many career catches he had in college?
No.
I think it was two.
He had five.
Oh, it was five. Okay.
Five. In his whole college career, this guy has barely played football. Mm-hmm. So there is a huge learning.
Okay.
So not only did he go to a small school in Carson Newman, he had five catches at Carson Newman. So there's a long way to go.
Okay, fair enough. Good answer. I appreciate
no
you guys.
I appreciate you calling in, Eric. Thanks a lot. Have a great day and enjoy your 4th of July weekend. And I'll take this time, by the way, to remind people there is no show tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff. The Giants have been kind enough to grant us Fridays off until training camp begins on the 27th.
All next week, too.
And then we're off all next week as well. So the next show will be the Monday when we get back. That'll be July 10th. And we will preview the Cowboys that day. I already have that guest lined up. Our good buddy Mickey Spagnuolo will be with us on that Monday. So make sure you tune in for that. 201-939-4513. Christian, he's in New York. What's up, Christian?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I called yesterday about Dak Prescott, and I didn't want to – I was not trying to say at all that he isn't a good quarterback because he's definitely better than we expected right out of the gates.
Yeah, because you were real hard on him, and I got a little defensive on, which is hard for me to defend a Cowboy.
I was going to say, Paul was defending a Cowboy. What did I miss?
I had to, though, because I thought you were body slamming this guy. But, okay, let's clarify. What did you really mean to say?
What I was basically trying to say is that his stats were just a little bit decorated, I feel, just because you were saying how he didn't have as big of a job as a lot of quarterbacks do in the league in terms of putting the team on their back. But another thing I wanted to get to was, you know, I heard about that thing with Nolan Carroll that happened in May. And is he going to be facing any sort of suspension for that? Because I just noticed David Irvin got his.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if Nolan Carroll gets hit for something. He had either a DUI or a DWI. I don't remember which one it was. It was one or the other. And, yeah, he might get a game for that. David Irving is suspended. Boy, they have another defensive lineman that's going to be at the first game, too,
right? They mentioned three of them on Sirius today. Oh, who's the other one?
DeMarcus Lawrence, I don't believe, is suspended, is he? I believe he's just trying to get back from a back
injury.
Yeah,
he was hurt. I don't think – shoot, we're going to have to look this up.
I will look that up.
They said there were three Cowboy linemen
who were
on that list.
As Paul looks that up, I'm just going to jump in on the Dak Prescott discussion really quick here to give my two cents. You're right. He had games last year where obviously he got a lot of help from the running game and he wasn't asked to do a whole lot. That you're absolutely correct. But there were other games where he really did put the team on his back. I'll give you a couple of examples.
Randy Gregory, he's
going to be out for the whole year. But I think there's somebody else that got a short suspension to start the year, or I might be wrong about that. Anyway.
It was David Irving.
Irving was the recent one. I thought there was one that had already been announced in the past. Maybe there wasn't, and I'm remembering this wrong. Yeah, I don't see anybody else on the list. It must just be Irving, Gregory, and then, of course, you're going to have if Nolan Carroll gets hit. So on Prescott real quick, I agree. He gets a lot of help from the running game and the offensive line. He's not asked to do as much as, say, like a Drew Brees or Eli Manning last year and things like that. No argument there. You're absolutely right. But I will say this as well. You look at a game against Tampa Bay that the Cowboys only won by 26-20 on December 18th. In that game, Dak Prescott completed 32 of 36 passes. 32 of 36 passes. That is an 89% completion percentage for 280 yards. And the Cowboys won that game by 6. Then in the playoff game against the Packers, a game that the Cowboys trailed in early in that game. Remember, they struggled offensively in that first half. At one point in that game, I believe they trailed 14-3, if I'm not mistaken. Prescott brought the Cowboys back, tied the game in the second half, and completed 24 of 38 passes with 302 yards, 3 touchdowns, and only 1 pick. So while I agree, overall, he does get a lot of help. When he was asked to do more last year, for the most part, he was able to. Now we'll see if that continues in year two. Now that teams have film on him and they adjust, maybe the offensive line's not as good. All those things could change the formula.
Yeah.
And 1 year does not make a quarterback. We've seen quarterbacks have great first years and then fall apart. But he seems like he has a good head on his shoulders. And if I was, as Paul would say, going to place a wager, I would not wager against him with the way he played last year and his work ethic.
You know, I think maybe what will help you here a little bit is the old Bill Parcells litmus test. Bill used to tell us all the time about these young superstar you know, hyped up rookie quarterbacks, no matter how well or how badly they did. Bill would always say, you don't really know what a quarterback is until he gets into the NFL and he has one of those three or four interception games or suffers a three or four game losing streak. Then you'll really see what the guy is, because now it's partially his responsibility. In fact, it's a lot on his shoulders to try to rebound and dig the team out of that hole, because he's the leader of the club.
Well, Paul, and also I'll throw this on top of that too. It's expectations. Last year, what were the expectations for Dak Prescott?
None.
Keep the team afloat. You know, rely on Ezekiel Elliott in the running game. You know what? After that year last year, though, and he makes the Pro Bowl and he goes off, what's his expectations now? Now the expectations for him to not only carry the team, win a playoff game. So the expectations can often really, really, really change things. And Christian, I don't want to keep going long. I want to let you finish. But a perfect example, I'll take it to a different sport. Kristaps Porzingis. His expectations for his rookie year in the NBA were very low. People thought he was a long-term project, right? Averages 14.7 rebounds. Everyone's thrilled. He could be a future star. People love him, right? All I heard in his second year was how much the kid regressed. Yet, he shot a higher percentage, scored more points, and blocked more shots. But because of expectations, those changed. People thought he regressed. So I think that's kind of how you can view it, too, how the pressure on a player can change from his first to second year based on his performance.
And I will just add what I tried to say to you at the end of the call yesterday. You know, I would take Prescott, even at this stage, over Kaepernick, even when he was playing in the Super Bowl, because I never thought Kaepernick was very good, quite frankly.
Yeah, because Prescott's not a running quarterback. That's the
correct
thing. He's a throwing quarterback.
Correct.
Right.
And so do I think that there is upside there? Do I think the odds are better that Prescott will be good as opposed to not so good? Absolutely.
Do you know what I think a good comparison is for him early in his career? And he's actually better than this other quarterback was in his first year. But I think a good comparison is McNabb, a guy who can run if he has to, has a really good arm on him, has a good head on his shoulders.
How about Steve McNair?
Yeah, I think that's another good one. Though McNair did sit out his first 2 years.
He did.
But I do think his skill set matches up well. And if you want to go further than that, I think I'm trying to think of another guy that actually works for that. Anyway, all right, Christian, now finish your point. Me and Paul just kind of talked
for
a few minutes here. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, that's all good. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that Prescott isn't leg-dependent says a lot about him. I mean, he was doing it from the pocket most of the time, it seemed. But, you know, just as a Giants fan, I have an ounce of hope left that he's not going to be ascending throughout the years and being this, you know, top 15 quarterback all the time that everyone so quickly rated him as. And, you know, I could see him being an Alex Smith type where, you know, he's not shredding you all the time, but he's keeping his team in the game.
Well,
and, you know, just as a Giants fan, that's my hope.
And you know what, Alex Smith
is the guy he's going to be.
And you know, Alex Smith is actually a very underrated athlete. That's actually not that bad of a comparison, though. Mm-hmm. I think he has more room to grow. There was a stat. I'll see if I can find it on Pro Football Focus. But go ahead, Paul. You're going to say
something. I was only going to add one other thing, and that is, Dak Prescott never proved in college that he could be playing at a high level in bad weather. And as you recall, I made a huge deal out of the bad weather forecast coming up to MetLife Stadium that weekend when Dallas came to play the Giants. And what happened?
And he struggled.
Prescott really struggled.
He did. It was actually his worst game of the year.
Yes.
And I was at that game.
And it was proven.
Awesome.
It was proven in college he did not play well in wet weather or extremely cold weather. He did not play in those conditions often. I think it was only three or four times in his whole career. But he had not solved the bad weather blues. He certainly didn't solve it or help his cause against the Giants in the Meadowlands last year. Now, that's going to be, to me, that's always going to be a bugaboo. Until he has a stellar game in bad weather, I'm always going to look at him through a little bit of a clouded glass. And if he's in a big spot, let's say he's got to go to Green Bay for a bad weather game, he's got to come to the Meadowlands for a bad weather game in the playoffs, I'll be honest, until he proves he can do it, I'm going to be down on him.
And I don't mean to, you know, try to punish the guy for being on such a good team, but You know, I think about guys like Eli and Phillip Rivers and how much harder of a job they have to go out there and succeed on offense than him. I just feel like it's too early to go, you know, making all sorts of, you know, ratings where he's even top 10. I mean,
correct. And look, Christian, just, on just that, hard. And Christian, and thanks a lot for the call. I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, the fact that he was top 20 on the NFL player voting
crazy
is a joke. It's a joke.
Crazy.
He was ahead of Drew Brees, for goodness sakes. That is high comedy. I mean, Drew Brees is so much better than Dak Prescott is right now, it's not even funny. And again, that's not really taking a shot at Dak Prescott. Drew Brees is a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah.
He's
off
at like 5,000 yards in a season.
You don't have to defend him.
No.
He can handle himself.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, this is the stat that I saw. I knew Pro Football Focus put it up on Twitter the other day. By the way, have you seen the new graphics they put up on Twitter?
They're very
with their
cool.
Stats? They're very well put together.
They are very
they
cool.
They do a good job with those. Deep passer rating. This is for passes that are in the air, targeted 20 yards or more down the field. Dak Prescott led the league in rate quarterback rating last year at 117. How about that? That's interesting. Which is why
wild.
He made the Alex Smith comparison. You know,
okay.
Alex Smith is not a down-the-field
right.
quarterback,
right.
which is why I wanted to bring that up. Anyway.
Right.
And by the way, Marcus Mariota led the NFL in deep passing yards with 806.
Did he? That's a pretty wild number.
And he also, I believe, was last in the league for receivers doing yards after the catch for him, which, given his receiving core last year, isn't that much of a surprise.
No.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. We got a full bank of callers.
Nice.
That is tremendous. Let's go to Dave in Cranford, New Jersey. Hi, Dave.
What's going on, guys? It's like a oasis in the desert. I'm glad you guys are getting some time off, but for real Giant fans, your show is a absolute must listen to. So thanks for the time you guys put in.
Thank awesome. You for that, Dave. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
I would like to get both of your comments just on two thoughts for the upcoming season. And one is, and actually Spagnuolo was being interviewed, and he kind of commented on this, and it made me think about the whole staff, and that is just the fact of the experience of the coaching staff going into this year, and how many coaches, both on offense and defense, were, you know, first year in the scheme or first year on the team last year. You know, Patrick Graham, a linebacker coach, Mike Solari. I mean, again, guys with experience, don't get me wrong, but Spagnuolo made the point that when you have that, you spend a lot of time as a defensive coordinator, and I would assume as an offensive coordinator, coaching the coaches and making sure that they're kind of buying into the scheme and making sure that they're coaching exactly the way you want. I think one of the reasons I look at this year in terms of the way that this team can make an improvement is just the experience of the coaches. I'd love to get your guys' comments on that.
You know, that's an interesting point. I haven't really thought of it that way. I would imagine a lot of that teaching of the coaches, Paul, happened before the players even showed up for their conditioning program in April and, you know, that February, March, January time.
Spags did refer to this, though. He's right.
No, I know he did. He
and
did.
And he made a very specific point that this was of value to him. So I'm not gonna.
No, me neither.
I can't expand on it. It doesn't sound like you can either, and I'm certainly not going to dispute it.
No, me either. It's interesting because I remember hearing him say it. I hadn't really given a ton of thought, to be honest with you. I also
actually,
think this,
and I think McAdoo actually made a point to it as well when he was talking about the offense. He said something about, I think he said something like 9 out of 11 guys on offense last year were being coached by a coach for the first time.
Well, that might be true, but most
of it seemed to be important to him that this year, that's not the case.
Well,
where the idea would just be, I think to me, it's just more of a comfort level than anything else, and
I
an experience level both for the player and the coach in terms of they're not learning the basics and maybe just from a relationship standpoint. And I just think it's another area. I think that their whole motto of a 1% gain seems like that was what the offseason was about. It just seems like it's another area that can address. Paul, I wanted to get your thoughts on one other thing, if I can, and that's kind of their plan on the running game. If you look at the Dallas game last year, the two Dallas games last year in particular, when you think about how we ran the ball in the first game, particularly at the end of the game. While we didn't run the clock out, we actually had some good runs at the end of the first game that made Dallas burn their timeouts and helped us hold on to that game. We ran a lot of trap plays right up the middle. And if you then go and look at the second game, you'll see that Lee just ate us up in that second game on those exact same
plays.
And he just a very great player, and probably their best defensive player by far.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And he just ate us up on those exact same plays. And it just seems to me that was our most effective and most common running game, and that we could never get to the edge and really do any outside runs effectively. And what do you see this year going into this season of what they're going to do to be able to try to get to the edge and not just be contingent and looking at one run play?
Well, I think the first thing you want to do to answer your question is to break down why you could not effectively run to the edge very often last year, and there are a number of factors. You did not have a blocking fullback. You did not have a blocking tight end. You did not have a right guard in particular, John Jerry, who, again, good in pass protection, needs improvement on his run blocking and is not very mobile.
That's the thing that gets me for him. He can't move in space.
So he's not going to get out and pull and help you seal that edge or lead somebody to that edge.
Or get to the second level of the linebacker.
Not going
to
happen.
Yeah.
And the other factor here, and this is why I keep talking about the running game all the time, there are so many domino effects that affect these things. You also did not have a wide receiving core.
Thank you, Dave.
That was very proficient at blocking for the run. And where do your wide receivers usually line up? Outside on the sidelines.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny.
You need help there.
The stretch play has become such a popular NFL run. Did the Giants run an outside zone stretch play once last year?
We just gave you four reasons why it's not a good play for them. So, what have the Giants done to enhance that? They got the blocking tight end in Ellison.
/ fullback, you can do that too.
Correct. I was going to get to that point number
two.
Well, that's all right. But fullback.
Yes.
He may be the fullback too.
Yes.
Okay. Brandon Marshall, good blocking wide receiver.
Yes,
always has been throughout his career. That helps that situation. You'd like to believe that the Giants' offensive line, even if it's the same starting five, you'd like to believe they'll be more proficient. Now, you're still not going to get magical feet onto John Jerry and make him quick and agile and getting him out there. It's not going to happen. He's a big man. He's very wide. And he's not going to win Dancing with the Stars.
And by the way, you could put DJ Fluker in that same category.
Yes. Yes. But so that particular part of the equation is really not doable. But the other parts to the equation seem to me like they can all be fixed based on the moves they made, and that should make the Giants able to run the ball outside a whole lot better. And let's not also forget the quicks of Perkins and Gallman. Perkins will learn how to read those things better when they're run because he's in his second season. And Gallman, although he's only a rookie, does show some quicks and may be able to do some of those things too.
All right, we got three calls I want to get in before we get to our guest in about 10 minutes. So let's go to Richie in Long Island. He's up next. Hi, Richie.
Hey, guys. It's Oak.
What's up, buddy?
Hi.
Much. So we're about 1 month away from training camp. I went to it first time last year. Really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the experience.
Cool.
You know, all the staff really puts together a good job on that front.
Thank you.
But I went early, so I didn't know that they didn't have pads right away. What day do you think they would have pads this year? Estimate it.
Good question. Let's look at the Giants training camp schedule, shall we? I can give you an idea of when we think they're going to get into pads for the first time. Let's see. Where on the website is the training camp
I promise schedule? You this. The conditioning drills, which is not they're not open to the public. That's on the 27th. The first practice on the 28th will not be a padded practice. That's a guarantee.
My guess is you are not going to have a padded practice until after the Giants have that first day off. My guess, the first three will be build-up practices, and you will not get your – I would not show up before August. You have a chance – I think your first chance at a padded practice is from August 1st through August 4th. I think those are the days you have a chance. They will not practice in pad all four of those days. My guess, they will practice in pads two of those 4 days. Which two is anybody's guess? I would say they will be in pads on either the 1st or the 2nd of August would be my guess. I cannot promise that, but if I had to venture a guess, I think that would be a guess.
Yeah, that was a good guesstimate. The training camp practice that I went to last year, there was some guy walked in with a Cowboys jersey on, and then the whole
I remember that day.
Oh, that's...
I remember that day very well. Didn't Brandon London, one of our broadcast coworkers, actually head into the crowd to talk to him?
I believe he did.
Yeah, he did. That was hilarious because I saw that. I think Training Camp Live, that episode.
Yes.
I saw it on TV, and he did actually interview him for like a little quick couple of seconds. But yeah, that was just so funny seeing guy actually walking in with a Dallas jersey and start chanting "Dallas sucks."
But hey, by the way, you know what? Real quick, I just did a little research.
Yes.
And let me give you a little hint off the record, but on the air. Show up on August 2nd or August 3rd for pets.
Okay. You heard it there.
Better info, I need smoke.
Show up August 2nd or August 3rd. I think you'll be happy. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Appreciate the call, Richie. But remember, folks, even when they get into camp and they don't do full pads and they're in uppers, there still is a level of contact that makes practice definitely worth watching. So, you know, uppers is good enough. You're not going to get those, 9-on-7 drills with just uppers. You need full pads for that, which I know and the 9-on-7 is kind of what they work on, their goal line run package, things like that. They're really trying to get physical. But if in uppers, you'll still get 1-on-1s between offensive linemen, defensive linemen, things like that that are a lot of fun to watch.
I would say two things about what happens here at training camp. First of all, there's no place that I'd rather be in 85-degree weather in August than watching Giants practice, and I don't care what they're wearing.
By the way, can I sign up for 85 degrees right now? I have a bad feeling that we're going to get hammered with
you do with did the Farmer's Almanac tell you this?
I feel like we've gotten away with it a little bit the last few years, and it hasn't been that bad. I think this year is going to be,
I don't mind if it's 90,
toasty.
I'm good with 90s.
Yeah, but
hundreds I don't need. I don't like 100. All right. And point number two that I was going to make, aside from me being the crazy man that I am, is that many people who are huge Giants fans and are within a 2-mile radius of driving to the facility don't have season tickets, or for whatever reason, they're unable to get tickets during the course of the season. This is your chance to come and see the team.
Yes.
You know, because training camp practices are free, no parking charge, and there's no charge to watch.
And you get to see the guys as close up as you'll ever see them.
It's a great thing.
And they do sign autographs, by the way. They have autographs for kids after practice. So make sure if you have kids, you can bring them in, and then they can do that as well. Two more calls before we say goodbye. John in Florida is first. John, what's up?
Oh, hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear, John. What's up?
Awesome. I've been listening to you guys every day since March. You do a great show. I couldn't have gone through this offseason without you.
Thank you.
Training camp, July 27th, for me, that's the beginning of the season. I mean, you
start
getting, you know, they're actually playing, like, intense, and then a week after that, you got the first preseason game. I'm thrilled. I just got to get through July, and then we're there. So, all right, well, this one I was calling about. Andrew Adams and Roger Lewis Jr. is what I really wanted to focus on right here.
Sure.
Andrew Adams, he did a lot of good for us last season, and I'm really grateful for everything he did. But the fact of the matter is, if Darian Thompson is not starting next season, that will be a tremendous loss for the Giants.
And, John, I will try to put your fears at ease. Both Paul and I have had this discussion many times. Both of us will be very, very surprised if Darian Thompson is not the starter.
Okay, good. So we agree on that.
Yes.
Okay. And even if by some stretch he gets along slowly or has a small relapse and Adams starts the first couple games, I don't think there's any way that Darian Thompson does not reclaim that job at some point very soon.
Correct.
So it's great, though, that at least should something happen to Thompson, we have a great reserve safety.
Yep.
So that's a huge bonus. And Roger Lewis, I don't know what's going on, but Lance, a couple of days ago, was talking, okay, because he saw Lewis in pads all last season, that he has more confidence in him than Rudolph. Okay, I get that, but that is exactly the reason why I do not have confidence in Lewis. I mean, he got plenty of playing time. He got targets. To me, he proved that he is not an NFL-caliber receiver, and not because he's not athletic. He has the same build as Odell Beckham. He just doesn't catch the ball.
Yeah, John, here's the thing about Roger Lewis, and it's funny you say that. You're right. He had problems holding on to the ball in game situations. Mm-hmm. We did not see that in training camp at all.
He was very good.
Yeah, he didn't drop anything. So I'm not sure if those were like first time in the league jitters or whatever it was. But I can tell you in practice, in the practices we were allowed to see at least, he did not have issues catching the ball. So that's something he's going to have to fight this year, though. Because remember, what you do in the game is what coaches remember. So that's something he's going to have to prove that he can do it this summer.
Last season, it was the same thing, though, right? Wasn't he a spring superstar? And then that's why he started, and then he made tons of drops.
Yeah, he was a rookie, though, and it was his first time out there. I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass. Mm-hmm. Let's see it, but I need to see it now, though.
You see, okay, you don't give up too quickly on a guy who's got the skill set that he has. You're going to give him a little bit of
a longer leash. We got to run, pal.
Because you believe the talent is there.
Absolutely, and I think you have to give him another chance, you know, to step in and – you know,
yep.
Give him a chance to do it.
Hey, I just wanted to answer.
Oh, good.
Okay.
This.
Sorry.
Hallelujah.
That's right.
Losing his mind.
Oh.
The illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we
Who
go.
Better to be the last call before we have our week off than Charlie in Portland, Maine? I have Knick fans bringing you up to me on Twitter now, by the way, Charlie.
That's good.
Are you a Knicks fan?
No, he's an easy
fan. No, I'm a
Celtics,
Lakers
right?
fan, actually.
Lakers
fan.
Lakers.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You just dropped a notch in my book, Charlie. That's terrible.
Knicks is second, but I have to be Lakers with Magic and Kareem and
they
everybody.
Don't,
so
you know Kareem doesn't play for them anymore, right?
Yeah, I know, but we're going to get better. We're going to get George, and we're going to get
But you got
LeBron
Brooke Lopez.
Okay.
And Charlie, by the way, I think Lonzo Ball might be the best person in this draft class. I think he's one of the best passers I've ever seen, putting aside the psychotic stuff that comes out of his dad's
yes.
mouth. In fact, I think you and LeVar Ball would get along really well. I want to put you two guys in a room, and I think it would be great television.
hey, Paul, you know, you see things through like a murky, milky glass. I think that's not just a few things.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm just kidding. Hey, I want to take up something that you said the other day about William Robert.
Yes.
And, you know, you said after, you know, the 2 years and the third year. But the thing that was smart was that our coaching staff realized that he was never going to be a tackle.
They moved him to guard.
And they moved him to guard
Correct.
In his third year, and he became a good player. Well, this coaching staff doesn't understand that Flowers or at least Hart are not tackles, and they should move him to guard. And this, you know, I think it's the same thing. I think we have guards. I don't think we have tackles. And I think they don't realize that yet. But they probably will realize that after
Charlie, it doesn't matter if they realize it because they've got enough depth at guard. And the bottom line is they need the tackles, and these guys are their best tackles. So much like when David Deal, who was always going to be a better guard in the NFL than he was a tackle, but wound up having to play tackle for several seasons, and by the way, won a championship doing so.
He was a starting left tackle
okay.
on two Super Bowl teams.
Exactly. Right. And that was not his best position.
Right.
So, Charlie, sometimes
you just have to
go with what you got. I'm not gonna disagree with you that there's a possibility that especially Bobby Hart might be a better guard, but that's not where they need him.
Guess, and you know, the 50 free agents, the best 50 free agents that are left remaining, you know who number one is?
Will Beatty.
No, Clady. Clady.
I thought it was going to be
He's still
boy.
Out there. He's number one.
Wouldn't touch him, Charlie.
Yeah, Charlie, he has too many injury issues.
There's a reason why he's still out there with the offensive tackle market that was out there and how desperate people were to sign anybody who could breathe. There's a reason why he's not in the league right now.
Now, if you get to the second week of camp and you feel like you need him and he's a veteran minimum guy, then, yeah, maybe you think about it. But I'm not sure Ryan Clady wants to play for the veterans minimum either.
Yeah.
Well, all I'm saying is we don't have a plan B, and we're counting on – and the other thing is Pro Football Focus just came out with the the offensive line ranking.
I saw that.
The Giants were number 28. You know who number one was? Not Dallas.
The no, Eagles. Philadelphia. Was, which goes to show you how much stock you should put in people who do believe everything on stats. Whoa. Please.
I actually have. Okay, Charlie, we have our guest on the line. We got to run, all right?
Yeah, that's all right. No problem.
Have a great holiday,
hey,
buddy.
Have a great holiday. Take a good week off, and we'll talk about the O-line
you
again.
You too, Charlie.
Thanks, buddy. I know I'm higher on the Eagles' offensive line than you are. I actually think it's really, really good. Lane Johnson, Jason Peters, I think are excellent tackles. But
it's a good line, but it's not in the top three.
I don't think I would put it at number one either. I agree.
Raiders, come on.
Titans.
And easily. To me, easily. All three anyway. Of those, easily over Philadelphia.
Let's get to our guest from the LA Daily News and AM 570 in Los Angeles. It's Vincent Bonsignor. He's a columnist that covers the Rams. Vincent, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here in steamy East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today?
I'm doing good, guys. It's funny listening to offensive line talk and rankings, and I'm actually talking to a couple of reporters who cover a team whose offensive line is ranked worse than the Rams. Rams made some improvements this year, theoretically, and we'll see how it all plays out on the field. But this is, you know, Rams' offensive line has been just putrid for the last 2 years or so. And last year it was really, really bad. They obviously addressed it, and it looks like, according to the rankings anyway, people are noticing and recognizing the changes, but we'll see if it translates to the field.
Well, Vincent, let's start there then, because obviously that's something the Rams need to get better. You don't want to have a rookie quarterback in front of a bad O-line. Todd Gurley, who we all know is really talented, didn't even rush for 900 yards last year because they couldn't open any holes for him. They bring in Andre Whitworth, who is somebody a lot of Giant fans wanted them to look at in free agency to be your left tackle. We know he's going to be good. I think John Sullivan, if I'm not wrong, is going to be your new starting center. They're moving some other guys around. Do you think this offensive line is going to be at least league average this year to give the offense a chance to succeed?
You know, I do. I really do. And I think that Andrew Whitworth, was maybe to the average NFL fan, the impact – it might be underestimated a little bit to the average NFL fan, but this is a guy that's going to help in so many ways. Obviously, he's one of the premier left tackles in the NFL. Granted, he's 35 years old, but there's just something about he's like aging like wine. He just keeps getting better. And considering who was playing, Greg Robinson was their left tackle the last couple of years and just was an abysmal and, a complete disappointment after being the second pick overall in 2014. You have a guy that they know can hold down that position. That helps your tight ends. Now your tight ends don't have to necessarily, be in pass coverage anymore. He can man that position by himself. Your tight ends can now be involved more in the passing game. Todd Gurley, that's going to help Todd Gurley hopefully get unleashed for him because he had, a terrible second year. And, some of it is on him, but most of it was on the offensive line. You have a second-year quarterback in Jared Goff who was playing under fire all last year. Now with Whitworth at left tackle, you figure that's going to get better. So, yeah, I think that just his presence alone and John Sullivan at center, and now you flip-flop, Rob Havenstein went from right tackle to right guard. Javon Brown is now the right tackle. It just optically, it looks a lot better right now through OTAs and minicamp than at any point last year. But again, it just has to translate to the field.
Well, you talked about the line and the running back already in Gurley. So where is the obvious progression coming for Goff? I look at those receivers. We all know what Robert Woods did with Buffalo a couple of years back. Tavon Austin, to me and John, he's a gimmick receiver. I really like Cooper Kupp coming out of the draft. So could you address the passing game for a minute?
Yeah, that was another aspect. When you look at, Jared Goff playing under fire and Todd Gurley not having any room to run, a lot of that was also, in conjunction with a bad offensive line. You just didn't have any weapons on the perimeter. Nobody that could put the fear into a defense where they were going to defend you accordingly. As a result of that, everyone's just crowding the line of scrimmage, daring Todd Gurley to beat them and daring a quarterback and without any, real talented wide receivers to beat them. That didn't happen. Now, granted, Robert Woods isn't a guy that's going to take, the top off of a defense. But what he is a guy that runs good routes. He's dependable. And mm-hmm. That was in such short supply last year for the Rams. He's a guy that, can help move the chains on a consistent basis. Too often last year, drives with sizzle out, you know, on third downs because wide receivers weren't where they were supposed to be or where the quarterback expected them to be. And when they did get targeted too often, they dropped balls, you know, over and over again. So, you know, the addition of Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp looked really good in OTAs. Granted, it's OTAs, but he flashed over and over again. You know, you have a tight end in Gerald Everett, their second-round pick, who looked like an athlete and looked like a weapon. Tyler Higbee, a second-year tight end last year, who got set behind by injuries early on, and that kind of affected his whole season. But healthy, he's a weapon. So you look at the offensive line, you look at who they've brought in through free agency and the draft for the perimeter players, and you figure that, and, you know, coupled with Jared Goff just being a better player in his second year as opposed to his first year, it just seems like he has a lot more help. And that goes to the coaching as well. You know, they have a brand new coach in Sean McVay, who's an offensive-minded mm-hmm. coach, and he's brought with him an offensive staff from the offensive line coach to the quarterback coach to the offensive coordinator. Every one of them have experience as an offensive coordinator, as a quarterback developer, and they didn't have that last year. You know, you went out and got Jared Goff, invested 6 draft picks to go get this guy at the top of the draft. But then you put in a former tight end coach as a first-year offensive coordinator. You had a quarterback coach in Chris Wenke, who had really no experience at the NFL level, you know, in terms of developing quarterbacks. And then on top of that, a bad offensive line and bad wide receivers. Jared Goff was handcuffed all of last year. They've improved the infrastructure around him, both from a talent standpoint and an offensive coaching standpoint. And I think that that's absolutely going to help him in year 2 as opposed to year 1.
How about Goff's skill set specifically? Where do you think he had the most issues last year, aside from, you know, the problems around him obviously forcing him to struggle? Where do you think he's made some strides from what you've seen in the spring? What are the coaches working with him on? Just Goff's development himself as an individual.
Well, you know, first and foremost, you know, this is a guy who played in a spread offense, the classic kind of a spread offense at Cal. And I think there was an underestimation in terms of the learning curve that he was going to experience going from that kind of an offense to an NFL offense. And again, I keep harping on this, but the fact that Jeff Fisher didn't surround him with better help from a coaching standpoint and a talent standpoint is still mind-boggling to me. And it ended up costing Jeff Fisher his job. So the learning curve of going from college to the NFL, I think that he's closing that gap. But when you talk about the skill set, it's there. The guy has an elite skill set. He can sling it. He gets the ball out quickly. He's accurate. He can make all the throws. You see that, you know, over and over and consistently in practice. But unfortunately for him, and this isn't an excuse, this is the reality of the situation. Too often last year, again, he was just handcuffed by a really bad offensive line and no real weapons to speak of. So it was really hard to gauge him as a player on, you know, playing on Sundays, because it just, he was under duress all the time. And until he's able to play with, you know, being able to drop back and not worried about, you know, getting hit every single time, having some time to throw and having some good wide receivers to throw to, it's going to be hard to gauge who he really is. But I think they've addressed a lot of those issues, and I expect that we're going to have a better idea this year as opposed to last year what Jared Goff is all about and what kind of future he's going to have at the NFL level.
Vincent, can I go to defense now? Because we know Quinn, Donald, Ogletree, these guys are proven really good defenders in the National Football League. But they went out and signed Connor Barwin from Philadelphia, and you know, I'll be honest, I don't know if that was a great investment. I'm not sure if he's on the down and if he's really worth the money they spent for him. But clearly they figured they needed to get another impact guy on D, and he has been known to rush the passer.
Yeah, and, you know, keep in mind that they're changing from Greg Williams' 4-3 defense to Wade Phillips' 3-4 defense. So they needed a guy, and Barwin had, you know, Connor played under Wade Phillips in Houston. So there's a familiarity with Wade and with Wade's defense. So Connor's going to switch from being a, you know, hand in the ground defensive end to now upright outside linebacker, which is where he's flourished most in his career. So it was more of a fit. He kind of came free unexpectedly for the Rams, and they jumped on him because they needed the personnel to fit Wade Phillips' defense. So at the very least, he brings that experience. And in talking to him, you know, he seems pretty revved up about playing for Wade Phillips again and playing in a system that he's flourished in. So it's a one-year contract, and I think that just watching him in practice, his understanding of the defense and how he's able to help other players, get a grasp of it, you know, I think is going to be beneficial. But you talked about Aaron Donald, and he's going to be – obviously it's the front is going to change, so his position is going to change. It'll be interesting to see where he goes from here in a new defense, although Aaron Donald is just a spectacular player.
If he's your biggest worry, then the Rams have no problems at all.
Right. And, you know, I feel bad for him because I don't think he gets the respect nationally that he probably deserves from his fans. Because this team has been so bad, you know, during his stay here. But this is a guy that is just you could just watch him all game and just leave the stadium satisfied because you saw – you know, a star player. So, but it will be interesting to see what the change in scheme does for him, whether it helps him or actually hurts him.
Yeah, I got to imagine bringing in Wade Phillips has got to be pretty exciting. Whenever he seems to join a defense, especially one with good personnel up front, he tends to really turn them around. What has it been like dealing with him, and is there a lot of optimism that, assuming the offense does a little bit more to help the defense out, this defense can go from, you know, the 10th or 11th best defense in the league and maybe try to jump into the top five.
And remember, the secondary he's dealing with is not that good.
Right.
Right. And, I mean, you know, they made some additions in the secondary. But you're right, that's going to be a bit of a concern early on. You've got Trumaine Johnson who's going into, you know, he's playing under the franchise tag. He wants a long-term deal. The Rams are, you know, a little bit skeptical on who he is right now. Is he the 2015, you know, Trumaine Johnson who had seven interceptions and over 70 tackles, or is he the guy that played last year and got one interception and 50-some-odd tackles? So they have to make a decision there. But, yeah, you're right. Wade Phillips does have a way of going into a new situation and elevating that defense, whether it's from last to the teams or from 10th to first or second. So, you have to figure, hopefully for the Rams anyway, that with just a little bit better offense, you know, that's going to help the defense because far too often last year, you know, they'd play lights out for 3.5 quarters, but then inevitably because, you know, time after time, three and outs or turnovers forced them back on the field earlier than they needed to from a rest standpoint, they would just wilt in the fourth quarter. So many of the Rams' losses were late in games when the defense just ran out of gas. So you figure that with a little bit better offense, that's also going to help the defense.
The Rams will be coming to visit the Giants, by the way, at MetLife Stadium on November the 5th, right after the Giants have their bye week, for a 1 o'clock start Eastern time, which, of course, means a 10 o'clock start body clock time for the L.A. Rams. I kind of want to ask you a little bit of an environmental question, Vincent, because we all know that the Chargers are out of San Diego, and we just talked about them the other day. They're also on the Giants' schedule, and now they are the second team in Los Angeles. I'm kind of curious, do the Rams even care that the Chargers are going to be around playing in a small soccer stadium in their neighborhood, or is that not an issue for them at all?
Well, I don't think from a player standpoint issue it's that big of a deal. It's funny you should mention that because I'm here in Costa Mesa where the Chargers are officially moving in this week and getting ready to talk to Dean Spanos, their owner, about, you know, being here, finally officially being here. It's interesting. I mean, you know, we went 21 years without the NFL. All of a sudden, within the span of 12 months, we've got two teams now. And so it'll be interesting to see how those dynamics work. Obviously, both teams are playing in temporary sites for the next three seasons until the permanent home, which they will share in Inglewood, opens up. I think from the Chargers' perspective, you know, it's a 100-mile move, which sounds easy, but from a logistics standpoint and just from, moving an NFL franchise, it's quite the undertaking. And their position is, you know, they have a Fight for L.A., banner that they're hanging up everywhere and hanging their hat on. But they're situated in Orange County, which isn't Los Angeles. They're in Costa Mesa. And you can see the thought process from, you know, maybe trying to secure that part of the market, you know, into Orange County, which they always had a lot of fans from Orange County that made the drive to San Diego. But it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. You know, some people have suggested, well, you have a Lakers-Clippers situation, but that's really not the case because to have that kind of a situation, you need a Lakers type of presence. And the Rams, frankly, gave that up when they left the market for 21 years, and then finally came back. They don't have that Laker kind of, you know, they have a strong fan base. A lot of fans stuck with them over the 21 years, but they just don't have that history. So the starting points aren't quite that as far off as people think. And I think the Chargers, if they put a good product out on the field, have a chance to make some serious in-ground inroads, you know, on the Rams, who do have a little bit of a head start. But it's all going to come down to the field. And from a Los Angeles standpoint, and if you talk to both teams, you know, privately, I think it'll be great if both teams are playing well. You know, it's if you can kind of create that sort of a buzz where both teams are playing well, and you know, on the every 4 years they're going to actually play each other on the field, and maybe who knows, maybe they'll meet it in Super Bowls down the line. But if you can create that sort of a rivalry, and both teams are putting a good product on the field, I think that's great for everybody, including both teams.
And you know what's funny about what you're saying in reference to the two teams being together? We had the Chargers flagship radio station gentleman on the other day who does some pre and post for them, and he said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if after a few years the Chargers wind up getting sold when Spanos gets rid of the team, because I guess the father's getting older, and he thinks they may wind up being sold to some rich guy who's going to want them back in San Diego after only a few years. Look, I'm not going to dispute it, but what do you think?
I'm guessing you were talking to San Diego.
Yeah, I was.
Correct, yes.
I was. were talking to, the guy from the Chargers flagship, and, you know, he seemed pretty confident that that could happen. I don't know. I just figured I'd throw it out to you.
Well, I hate to burst his bubble. I do hear talk of that in San Diego, but that's not happening. First of all, there's a huge penalty involved if they flip the team. Anybody that was moving to Los Angeles, whether you were talking about the Rams from St. Louis or the Raiders, had that happened from Oakland, or obviously the Chargers from San Diego, the NFL was, you know, savvy enough to understand we're not going to let somebody go in there, reap those benefits to flip it for, you know, twice the price of what they would have gotten in their home market. Mm-hmm. There's provisions for all of that.
That makes sense.
I have talked to Dean Spanos over and over and over again. He is beyond excited about his opportunity here in Los Angeles. He's turned the page on San Diego. He's actually in the process right now of sort of segueing, now that the stadium is taken care of and the Chargers' long-term future is in place, he's kind of segueing things to handing everything over to his sons, AJ and John, who will run the day-to-day operation. Mm-hmm. John runs the football side. AJ runs the business side. And they're in line to become the faces of the Chargers. That's all in place. They're not looking to sell or anything like that, and they're not looking to move back to San Diego. They fought a long time trying to get a stadium. It never worked in San Diego. They finally got their home here in Los Angeles, and this is where they plan to be for the next at least 30 years or so.
Okay.
real quick question on the logistics of it. Am I correct in that the Chargers are not putting any capital into the stadium, and it's purely a rental situation where the Rams are building it, the Chargers are renting it on the weeks that they have home games?
Close, but actually they're not even paying any rent. So they're not paying the Rams anything to play there. That was part of the deal. When the Chargers and Raiders were looking at Carson and the Rams were fighting for Inglewood, when it all came to fruition, and Stan Kroenke and the Rams, you know, said, okay, we'll be willing to bring on a partner so that Dean Spanos didn't get squashed in the process or Mark Davis didn't get squashed in the process. Part of that provision was it's rent free, and look at it this way, the Chargers are paying $500 million in a relocation fee. That would have been what they would have paid, maybe a little bit less, to have a partnership stadium in San Diego. So they're putting down $500 million to their colleagues, the rest of the NFL, for the right to move here. But then after that, it's free and easy. They're not paying any rent. They're not putting any money into the stadium. Hmm. They'll be selling, PSLs for their season ticket holders. That money will go to the Rams because the Rams are constructing the stadium, so that'll go towards offsetting construction costs.
There
but other than that, they're here. And,
well, they had to get something.
And there's really no debt that they're getting into. It's just the $500 million that they have to pay over 10 years or 30 years if they decide to go down that route. To their fellow owners.
Final question. We didn't actually ask you much about Sean McVay. He's the youngest head coach in the league. You've had to deal with him in the spring.
My fault.
That's okay. tell us what it's been like dealing with him, and do you think he's going to, you know, handle this big responsibility, which, by the way, he's also going to call the plays too, which is a really big job for a young kid getting his first head coaching job.
Yeah, that's the plan, at least for this year. He's going to call the plays. There's something about him, I got to say. You know, he's 31 years old. But and I tell him this, you know, he's got sort of an old soul. I mean, he's grew up around football. His father, John McVay, who Giant fans, I'm sure, remember who.
Oh yeah,
Giant fans know who John McVay. My dad was a huge Giants fan. I remember all of that playing out with the handoff to Larry Zonka. And
yeah. Okay, we can move on. Just go right ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Giant fans also know that John McVay then moved to San Francisco 49ers.
Yes.
He was one of the architects of the 49ers, you know, dynasty, basically. So he reinvented his career and his name, you know, over those years. That's who Sean McVay, that's his grandfather. So he's grown up around football. He's learned under, you know, John Gruden and Mike Shanahan, and he has sort of this old, wiser soul to him, but also a lot of enthusiasm and passion and imagination, and that seems to be resonating with the players. I don't know if it's going to matter what, you know, it result in one more win for the Rams next year, but it just seems like they got it right with this coach, and it'll be interesting to see where this all goes, whether they're on the right path with him.
Vincent, good stuff. We appreciate the time. Enjoy your few weeks of rest before the grind begins at the end of July, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Likewise, guys. See you in November.
Absolutely. Thanks, Vincent. Good to talk to you, and we will see you in November. Make sure you bring your parka. Actually, it shouldn't be bad that bad then. But I'm sure it'll be colder than it is in LA.
The worse it is for them, the better it is for the Giants.
Absolutely. All right, folks, just a reminder, no show tomorrow. And, of course, no shows next week. The Giants' offices are closed. And then we'll be back on Monday for Big Blue Kickoff Live on July the 10th. So make sure you tune in for that. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Everybody, have a great holiday weekend and enjoy your week.